Welcome back to Shattering Mist. We are going to turn the page and go examine Yahweh's testimony. He was teaching us about the Shabbat. He put the Shabbat in the context of the seventh day, of it being a promise to us, of it being set apart, which means that it is designed to set us apart unto God and to set us apart from human institutions, particularly religious and political institutions. God specifically said that we are to observe everything associated with the Shabbat. Observe does not mean to do. It does not mean to keep. It means to closely examine and carefully consider. It means to use your eyes to read what God has presented regarding the Shabbat. And then he says that all everything regarding the Shabbat should be considered in relation to his name, Yahweh, and based upon what he has taught us regarding the Shabbat. His teaching is found in the book called Teaching the Torah. He then equates the Shabbat with his rescue of the children of the covenant from the crucibles of Egypt. The Mitzrayim, which is the crucibles of Egypt, speaks of human and religious oppression and how God himself intervened, Yahweh, with his hand to lead us out and away from these crucibles, oppression from religion and from politics, from military and economic schemes. He was not only shattering the myths, he was freeing his people from them. And he said that this was the means to salvation. Now, the means that Yahweh used expressly as it relates to intervening on behalf of his children to save them is myriad in the Moed Mikre, the first four of which were previewed during the Exodus. Passover led to the sparing of lives. Matzah led to the removal of the political and religious corruption from the children of Israel as they were led away from Egypt. Mokudim symbolized that now, under God's leadership and his protective care, the children of Israel were God's children, the covenant's children, now that they had been freed from and had walked away from and were separated from nationalism, religion, politics, economic and military schemes, and that on seven Sabbaths into their journey on Mount Horeb, the Torah was revealed, enriching them, empowering them. That is the story of the Exodus. God said that he saved us in conjunction with him intervening in this way, and that all of this is associated with the Shabbat, which he calls it a nuach, where he settled our debts so that we could settle with him. There are, therefore, seven essential insights ensconced in the Shabbat. The primary of those is the spiritual message that we cannot work for our salvation, that it is Yahweh, not Yahusha. It is Yahweh, therefore definitely not Jesus Christ, alone who provides the way and the means. If we want to be with God, Yahweh, we must rest and rely on him to nuach, settle us safely in his home, completely nuach, settling all issues regarding our adoption into his family. The second insight is that the Shabbat is Kodesh. It is set apart. It is the special day. It is the day for prioritizing our relationship with Yahweh, getting to know him better. The Shabbat is designed to Yada Yahweh, and therefore to worship God on Sunday is wrong by every possible way. Worship has nothing to do with observation. Worship has nothing to do with relationship. And Sunday is the day that pagan gods are honored, and it completely obliterates all of the promise, all of the symbolism, all of the meaning and message and teaching associated with the Shabbat, the seventh day, and its promise. Third, the Shabbat is a time to celebrate Yahweh's Shabbat promises. He has sworn an oath, and he has made a solemn vow to us. Shabbat, the word upon which Shabbat is based, means promise. solemn oath. It's Yah's promise relative to the covenant. And he has made five promises relative to the covenant. It's not just one, there's five. Now, collectively, they are all manifest through the one covenant. But those five promises are Pesach, make us eternal. Matzah, make us perfect. Bukudim, adopt us into his covenant family. Seven Sabbaths, which is Shavuah, enrich us with his Torah teaching and empower us with his Spirit. Those are the first four mikrei. They were the first four mikrei that we were told were going to be fulfilled in the fourth millennia of human history, as through the Genesis account, when the greater light was a sign of these meeting times. They are the first four mikrei that are required to facilitate the promises of the covenant. Fourth, the Shabbat is defined by Shama, by listening to and Shamar, closely observing Yahweh and his word. The better we hear, the more diligently we examine, the closer we grow to God. There may be nothing I can share with you over the course of all of these programs that is more important than Shama and Shamar, Yahweh. Listen to Yahweh, observe, which is closely examine and carefully consider, Yahweh's testimony, which is found in the Torah and prophets. If you do that, you will come to know him as he is. If you do that, you will fall in love with him. You'll first come to respect him, because he is so vastly superior to any caricature God that is created by religion. He is consistent. He is approachable. He's likable. He's merciful. He's loving. He's reliable. He's truthful. He's brilliant. He's compassionate. He's interesting. He's fun to be around. Get to know him. You get to know him by Shema and Shamar, listening to him and observing what he has to say. The better we hear, the more diligently we examine, the closer we grow to God. Fifth, man, who is represented by the number six, the day upon which we were created, and is known as a carbon-based life form, with the atomic number of carbon being six, in addition to God, who is one, equates to Shiva, seven, which describes Shabbat, being completely satisfied and fulfilled, lacking nothing. This not only depicts Yahweh's plan of salvation, it describes the result. Creation, like salvation, is an equation. Yahweh's redemptive plan is based on 6 plus 1. This pattern, depicted in the 7 Moed Mikre, depicted in the Shabbat, the seventh day, depicted in everything associated with Yahweh. It is the plan that underlies the purpose that the universe was created and life was conceived. Even when we consider life, if I'm not mistaken, DNA is comprised of four characters in a three-dimensional construct. 4 plus 3 is 7. Everything that God designs is based on 7. Even the universe itself, we're, of course, familiar with the three dimensions of height, depth, and width. But now we know that time is a dimension. But we have also learned that there are three other aspects of the universe which we are searching to understand. They are the eternal attraction of dark matter. Dark only in the sense that we don't know what it is. God does. The repulsion that's associated, and repulsion would speak of, or attraction would speak of relationships, repulsion would speak of choice, of dark energy, of energy that is unknown to us. And then there's this communication that we recognize that matter is nothing but organized energy, and that even energy responds to observation. That there is a communication medium at the very heart of what we observe. which is why God spoke the universe and life into existence. Everything follows the pattern of seven. The sixth lesson embedded in the Shabbat is prophetic. All human history, as well as Yahweh's plan of salvation, unfolds based on a pattern of six plus one. It is the key that unlocks God's timeline. Adam's choice to separate from God, disrupting the equation, occurred in 3968 BCE, year one on Yahweh's calendar, maybe year zero, depending on how you would look at it, ending in year one, beginning in year zero. Noah's flood took place 1,000 years later in 2968 BCE, 1000 Yah. Abraham's reliance upon Yahweh and his willingness to listen to and trust God facilitated the ratification of the covenant on Mount Moriah in 1968 BCE, 2000 Yah. And Yahweh's tabernacle was constructed by Solomon in 968 BCE, year 3000 Yah. Exactly 1,000 years later, in 40 Yovel from the covenant's commencement, Yahusha enabled the covenant on Mount Moriah, fulfilling the Moed Mikre of Pesach, Passover, Matzah, unyeasted bread, and Bakudim firstfruits in the Yovel year of 33 CE, which is 4,000 Yah. Now, before we consider the last two dates on Yah's calendar, recognize the reason that it's 33 CE, not year 4000, is because the Roman Catholic Church decided that they would base their new religion and their calendar on the birth of their God. Now, mind you, God cannot be born. God was not born. God is. He has been, he is, he will be. That's what his name means, and why it's based upon the Hebrew verb haya, to exist. And therefore, they did not recognize the prophecy in Bereshith 1, which is the opening book of the Torah, speaking of the importance of year 4000 Yah, of the greater light becoming visible to us as a sign relative to the Moed meetings. They did not recognize that his arrival on planet Earth was the sixth of seven, and that his arrival was a far less significant event than his fulfillment of the covenant's promises in 33 CE, which should have been 4000 Yah. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. I'm your host, Diada. We're going over the timeline of human history from our expulsion from the Garden of Great Joy, the Gan Eden, whereby we will return to the conditions experienced in the Gan Eden when the entire earth in year 6000 Yah is transformed into Eden-like conditions, and His presence is here among us for 1,000 years. Continuing with his timeline, we learn that in year 4000 Yah, that would be the Yobel year of 33 CE on our pagan calendars, Yahweh fulfilled the first four Moed Mikre, enabling all of his covenant promises. There are three Moed Mikre, our meetings to be called out and to be welcomed by God, left on his schedule. We do not know the year for certain that the Moed Mikre of Teruah will be fulfilled. And it is a calling home, it's a harvest of the covenant children. Now, in it, the reason that its timing is really not essential is that all God tells us is that it's going to occur prior to the time of Jacob's trouble, the great tribulation, the last 7 years of history as we know it, with men in charge of this planet. Because this day is a day for us, those of us who have embraced the terms and conditions of the covenant, to share those terms and conditions with others, to proclaim Yahweh's testimony, to introduce God as he actually is to all who will listen, and to proclaim the way to his home, which is by way of these seven Moed Mikre. And so that is the purpose of this day. And so we will continue to celebrate this day until Yahweh calls us home. Then, we will we know for certain that in year 6,000 Yah, which is the best I can calculate it using so many different historical and scriptural sources, that year 6,000 Yah, based upon the fact that Pesach, Matzah, Bukkudim, and Shavuot were fulfilled in year 4,000 Yah, and year 4,000 Yah was 33 CE on our pagan calendars, that means that year 6,000 Yah will occur in 2033. The return of Yahweh is going to occur on Yom Kippurim, the Day of Reconciliations. That is the day that prophetically he tells us that he's going to reconcile his relationship with Yehudim and with Yisrael. Now, the reason that reconcile is important and the audience is important is that God, through his covenant, has enabled anyone individually who chooses to know him, who chooses to accept the terms and conditions of his covenant, to individually become his children and to receive all the benefits promised by the covenant. But you see, the covenant was not just individual. It was also collective. It became collective through Jacob and the 12 tribes. And God ultimately wants to affirm his promise made to Abraham, to Yishak, and to Jacob to reconcile his relationship with the children of the covenant. That is only possible when they drop their religion, when they cease being religious, when they drop their politics and they turn to Yahweh, recognizing who he is, calling out to him by name, understanding what he has done for them, understanding the role that he played as the Messiah, Yahusha, and looking to him as the one that they themselves pierced. When they do this and they recognize him as an individual and call out to him by name, then it is possible for Yahweh to reconcile his relationship with them. This is the renewal of the covenant that will take place in our future, in 2033, year 6,000 Yah. Therefore, the covenant has not yet been renewed. At the time of its renewal, Yahweh says, with the children of Yisrael and with Yehudim, he is going to explicitly write a copy of his Torah and place it inside of us. Since none of us have a complete and accurate copy of his Torah teaching inside of us at this moment, that means that its fulfillment is yet future. Just as the fact that the children of Yisrael and Yehudim are not yet reconciled to God and are still in opposition to him. This date on our future, in year 2033, which is year 6,000 Yah, is going to commence on the Day of Reconciliation, Yom Kippurim. If you're looking for a date on your pagan calendar, it is sundown, 6:22 p.m. in Yisrael on the 2nd of October. That is Yom Kippurim in year 6,000 Yah. 5 days later, and over the course of 5 days, Yah was going to annihilate all of those who are in opposition to him, all of those who chose not to embrace him, all of those who came to war against him. And he's going to return the entire earth to the conditions experienced in the Gan Eden, the Garden of Eden. We'll return to Shattering Myths in a moment. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. I'm your host, Yana. We're talking about Yahweh's timeline. I have shared with you, because he has shared with us, that he's going to return in year 6,000 Yah. It's 2033 on our pagan calendars, that his seventh visit to planet Earth in a quasi-corporeal fashion will be on Yom Kippurim, the Day of Reconciliations. Is the last event prior to the beginning of the millennial Shabbat, where Yahweh is honoring the last of the promises he made to Abraham, to Yishak, and to Jacob, which is to reconcile his covenant relationship with the children of Yisrael. And so he will do so. Now, also unifying Yisrael and Yehudah, at that time. And during the 5 days that transpire between his return and the celebration of Sukkah, which is 5 days later in year 6,000 Yah, 2033 on our pagan calendars, God is going to restore the earth back into the conditions experienced in the Garden of Eden. He's going to set up his home in Jerusalem. He is going to reconstruct Mount Moriah, the Dome of the Hoofy Print, the Dome of the Rock, the Alaska Mosque, and all cathedrals and religious sites will be obliterated. All human corruption, all religious corruption will be obliterated. And we will find there that on Mount Moriah, Yahweh will set up his home. We can visit with him there. During those 5 days where he's cleaning the earth, that leads to him camping out with us for 1,000 years. Between year 6,000 Yah and 7,000 Yah, we celebrate those conditions. This is the 7,000th year period. It is a mirror of Shabbat. There will be a 1,000-year celebration of Shabbat on commencing on Sukkah. That Sukkah, by the way, in 2033 happens to be a Shabbat. It will commence on a Friday at sunset, using our pagan terminology, and then commence through the Shabbat and for 1,000 years. That is the story. That is the plan. That is the timeline that God has given us. Are you ready? He's not going to change. Everything he has done thus far has been done right on the schedule that he gave us. And there's no reason to suspect, since he is always consistent and always dependable and always on schedule, that anything will change. Now, what we've come to call the Ten Commandments is actually comprised of three sweeping introductory statements. In fact, it's based upon the Hebrew word for statement, which is debar, and seven actual instructions. None of these are numbered. Very few of them are understood. In fact, there is a reason that we are told that Yahweh's only handwritten communication to his creation was inscribed on two tablets. There'd be no reason to tell us there were two tablets unless there was a differentiation between the first and second. Otherwise, why not just scribe it on one? Yeah, you change the size of the font, and you could just as easily write it on one tablet, but no. We were expressly told that there were two tablets. There's a reason for that. In the original text, considering the use of prefixes and suffixes in Hebrew to denote prepositions, pronouns, and conjunctions, God's Torah summation, the three introductory statements, and his seven instructions were each comprised of 77 words. Therefore, should Yahweh have been consistent and used the same size letters, fulfilling the same percentage of the similar size tablets, the entirety of the first tablet was devoted to his first three-point summation of the Torah. Summation, really, of the covenant. While the second was used to delineate his seven specific instructions, all of which serve to illustrate and to underscore the message he had written on the first of those two tablets. To begin, the author of the Torah introduced himself by name, Yahweh. Although most Christians aren't aware of this because their theologians have robbed them of the vital information by removing God's name from his testimony and replacing Yahweh's name with Satan's title, the Lord. And in spite of the fact that Yahweh emphasized the role he personally played in our liberation from judgment, from human oppression, from works-based salvation schemes, in his handwritten summation of the Torah, as well as the promises and terms and conditions of the covenant, faithful believers reject this message because they have been indoctrinated by Paul and their clerics into believing that the Torah is an oppressive taskmaster, that it's a obsolete and archaic legalistic burden which enslaves, which cannot save those who observe its instructions. Jews, who were formerly known as Yehudim, which means those who are related to Yah and those who relate to Yah, were told by Rabbi Akiva, the founder of modern-day Judaism, and later by the Rambam, Maimonides, that Hashem, the name should never be spoken, and that allegiance to the rabbis and their mitzvah would be equated to righteousness. Equally sinister, Muhammad, by plagiarizing and bastardizing the rabbi's Babylonian Talmud, hoodwinked Muslims into believing that the God of the Torah, of the prophets, and the Evangelion, which they corrupt to Injil, was Allah. And that killing Jews, Christians, and peaceful Muslims for him would be rewarded with an honored place in the perverted Islamic paradise, replete with perpetual virgins and rivers that flow with booze. As a result, the message Yahweh engraved in stone is lost on believers the world over. This is from Shemoth Names, which has been corrupted to Exodus 21-3. And God conveyed all of these statements, providing perspective in our presence, saying, I am Yahweh, your God, who relationally brought you out and delivered you from the realm of the crucible of Egypt, out of the house of slavery. You shall not exist with other gods in proximity to my presence. It's a simple statement. Yet it undermines every religion, from Hinduism, many gods, to Buddhism, no God, from Judaism, animosity for God's name, to Christianity, wrongly named God, from Islam, Satan as God, to Mormonism's fables as God, even the Jehovah's Witnesses, wrong name for God. Christian Scientists, Scientologists, and socialist secular humanists, where man denies God, are all impugned by Yahweh's introduction. God has but one name, and Yahweh alone is God. The countless corrupted and errant variations of him created by men on behalf of their religious schemes are not to be tolerated, including Krishna, Shiva, Vishnu, Buddha, Hashem, Jesus Christ, Allah, and Jehovah. Let me share all that with you again, because it really is enlightening. It's something that, if you can grasp the gravity of all of this, your world's ahead in terms of your knowledge and understanding of God and your willingness to reject everything associated with religion. And God, Elohim, the Almighty, conveyed all of these statements, providing perspective in our presence, saying, I am Yahweh, your God, who relationally brought you out and delivered you from the realm of the crucible of Egypt, which serves as a metaphor for human religious and political oppression, who delivered you from this realm out of the house of slavery. You shall not exist with other gods in proximity to my presence. This simple statement, as I have shared with you, but it bears repeating, undermines every religion. Hinduism, where there's many gods, Buddhism, where there is no God, Judaism, which has as its basis a complete animosity for God's name, to Christianity, a wrongly named and identified God, from Islam, where Allah is modeled after Satan, to Mormonisms, which is nothing but fables about God, and even the Jehovah's Witnesses, who have the wrong name for God, especially socialist secular humanists, where man denies God, all impugned by Yahweh's opening statement. Yahweh has encouraged us to develop a monogamous personal relationship with him on a first-name basis. Then, because he is spirit, Yahweh asks us to avoid all associations with false gods by way of their religious imagery. And as we shall soon see, he even asks us not to worship them, not to bow down to them in a religious setting. That forms the basis of his second statement. But more than this, Yahweh has emphatically stated that his Dabar word lies at the heart of his Dabar conversation with humankind. That is why Dabar is repeated twice in the opening stanza, first as a verb and then as a noun. by doing so. His promise is that His Word will provide the means to our liberation from judgment and from oppression. More fully amplified and illuminated by way of the Hebrew words Yahweh Himself wrote, we are afforded the opportunity to learn even more about Yahweh's nature and purpose. This again is Shemoth Names 21-3. And the Almighty conveyed, Dabar, communicated, spoke, wrote, and provided instruction and direction with all, kol, every one of these words, Dabar, conversations, statements, and promises, providing perspective, ele, from a relatively close vantage point as God. In our presence, eth, in association with us, and in proximity to us, saying amar, explaining, claiming, answering, counseling, warning, and promising, I am Yahweh, your God, the Mighty One, whom relationally brought you out and delivered you, Yacha, descended to serve, extending myself to guide and to lead and to carry you away from the realm of the crucible of Egypt. We'll return in a moment. Welcome back to Shatteringness. Let's share in the amplified portion Shemoth names 21-3 once again, and then we'll turn to Glenn in Philadelphia, who is called in. And God, the Almighty, conveyed all of these words, all of these statements in our presence, saying, I am Yahweh. Boy, that's the key to the whole thing. The first thing that He conveyed to us is His name. Nothing more important for us to know than His name. It's the first thing He conveyed to us. I am Yahweh, your God, the Mighty One, Elohim, who relationally and beneficially, Asher, brought you out and delivered you, Yatzah, descended to serve, extending myself to guide, to lead, to carry you away from the realm of the crucible of Egypt, Min Eretz Mitzrayim, the smelting furnace where metals are refined and tested, which is a metaphor for judgment and for oppression. Out of the house, the Min Beth of slavery. That's the competitive house, the house of man of corruption versus the house of God, which is based on the covenant. In other words, the house of man enslaves. The house of God liberates. You shall not exist, lo hai Allah. You shall not exist, you shall not approach with other gods in relation to my presence. God's not going to tolerate anyone who is religious in heaven. If you're using the Lord Jesus Christ, you're not welcome. With that known, let's turn to Glenn. Hello, Glenn. How are you, my friend?
All right. Thanks. Hanging in. Heard your announcements at the beginning today. Which day did you say Larry was going to be hosting his ad hominem hour?
Oh, Larry is going to fill in for me on Thursday, doing both segments on Thursday and Friday in the first hour.
Friday, Thursday, okay.
Good. Yep. Right now we're having a discussion with Scott behind the scenes to encourage Scott to actually complete the story in the news of David Headley and the malfeasance of the U.S. government in the first hour tomorrow, and the possibility of Scott also doing the second hour by continuing his presentation on the 10 statements tomorrow. So that may, rather than being an archive program, might be a program of all new material.
Oh, very good. Okay, so for Thursday, Friday, I'll be sure to wear a cup. Anyway.
You know, it's true that Larry gets a rap for being a harsh, particularly as it relates to the corruption and mythology that is Christianity. And it is the only time probably in my adult life that I have been considered the soft-spoken one and the compassionate one as opposed to the aggressive one. So I kind of like the cover that Larry provides, because I'm usually very, very aggressive and considered intolerant because of my devotion for Yahweh. But the thing that I would share with you is that one of the reasons that I'm sure that Larry has had at times a tendency to come off more aggressively is that he engages Christians far more than I do. And so, you know, it's kind of like God's reaction. When you see Yahusha speaking to the religious establishment of his day, he really comes off as harsh. He is really aggressive, right in their faces. I mean, calling them all sorts of names. All of those are justifiable. But I guess if you're engaged in the battle on a regular basis, as Larry is, there's a tendency to respond just as Yahusha responded to the religious establishment of his day. Anyway, I understand that you had a question on the means that Yahweh uses to convey his name. Oh, I think we have a disconnect here. Let me push again. Are you there, Glenn? Oh, I think we have lost Glenn. Well, what I do want to do is, if Glenn does calls back in time, great, but let's focus on what God said. This is his opening statement to humankind. The first thing that he conveyed to us that he wrote with his own hand. This is something that's different than what we normally see from God. God normally chooses to communicate through individuals. But in this particular case, the only thing that Moshe did was carry the 10 statements with him. The first set he broke, and God etched a second set. Glenn, I understand that you're back, and right now we're at the end of our hour. Yeah, please call in with your question either in the next couple of days or the first of next week.
Yeah, that's what I told him. Sorry about that. Bye-bye.
That's okay. It's my pleasure to turn the program now over tomorrow to Scott, and then Thursday and Friday to Larry and to IQ. I am Yada. Have a good rest of your week.